Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
So two guests today, Jamie and Nikki Gaddam. They are the duo leading Matangi Beef and Angus Beef Station in Hawke's Bay. They've recently won 6 gold medals at the New Zealand Food Producer Awards. So we'll get on to eating it, but first to talk farming, Jamie Gaddam joins me now. He's Director and Farm Operations Manager. Hi, Jamie.
G'day, Jesse. How you going?
Yeah, good. Nice to talk to you. Tell us a bit about your station.
Yeah, so, well, we're here in the Hawke's Bay in the Tukituk Valley. We have 2 farms here, and we are breeding cattle and sheep. And our vision here at Matangi is to, we're trying to produce the best grass-fed Angus beef in the country for the domestic market, for Kiwis, just Kiwis, trying to keep the best here at home, Jesse. And so, yeah, that's our vision.
Couple of terms there. First of all, grass-fed. People will be saying, well, hang on, isn't all beef grass-fed? That's where they live, after all.
Yeah, well, you'd think that. There is grass-fed beef, and then there's what sort of termed as grain-fed, which, you know, crops are grown and fed to animals and feedlots and things. So, no, we focus on grass-fed Angus beef. We sort of chose the Angus breed because it suits the country, the sort of the type of country here in Hawke's Bay, and so that's what we do. We've got a cow herd basically that's selected for eating quality, and we put bulls over them that have a similar sort of traits in terms of eating quality to try and get a really the potential of a high quality eating calf on the ground, and then. You know, we really look after that calf through its young stages. First sort of 200 days, we really feed it well and make sure these animals eat well through their whole life. And then we can talk about it, but we process those animals through our own butchery now, which has been cool. But, we put a real focus on the farms for eating quality.
Is it tough work, I guess, maintaining that feed throughout the year?
Yeah, well, we started this back in 2015. I met the owner of Matangi, who's actually an Austrian businessman, and we sort of had this vision. We came together and had the same vision of wanting to produce this beef for the New Zealand market, and we've learned a lot in the last, you know, since 2015. So yeah, it is hard work, but we've learned a lot and learned how to do things better. We're getting really good results now, and so, you know, it's not hard work if you get good results and you get good feedback from clients.
Do you ever run out of grass?
Yeah, we do run out of grass, but that's, you know, in the fringe seasons we grow quite a bit, and you know, into the spring and autumn we grow excess feed, so we make a bit of baleage, make a bit of silage. I've got to make sure these animals are putting weight on every day of their life, so we make a bit of baleage on farm and feed them, and if they're putting weight on, we find that the intramuscular fats and the marbling in the meat becomes more consistent.
How many animals do you have on the farm?
So we're growing up to a herd of 250 cows, and I've got to be clear on this. Everything we put through our brand is bred on the property. We're not buying any cattle in. Not buying anything, and it's all bred on the property. So there's 250 cows, and then from that, obviously, you know, 250 calves, 250 one-year-olds, and then we have the 250 crop that year that we're the 250 two-year-olds that it'll go through our butchery, which we're killing about 3 to 4 a week. Yeah.
Can you just explain that to me again? So my brain didn't work for that one. So you got the cows.
Yeah, so we've got the cows. So there's 250 cows, and obviously they all have a calf every year.
Yeah.
So there's 250 cows, and then 251-year-old cattle. So they were the year before calves. And then there's 250 2-year-old cows, cattle, sorry. And they are the ones that, so we're killing everything at about 2 years old,
Got it,
nothing under
got
2 years.
it. And how significant is it that you're doing that? Did I hear you right? You're doing that actually on the station? It's quite rare, isn't it?
Well, yeah, we're actually the only producers that we're aware of in New Zealand that have full control from the breeding of our beautiful cattle that grow here, right through to delivering it to the doorstep of our clients. And I mean, there's lots of farmers that do what we're doing. They've all got, cow herds and have calves on the ground, but we've sort of got full control of the whole production process as well, right through. So we're looking for real consistency in our meat, and we're finding that doing it this way, having really good breeding in our cattle, and good management styles on the farm, and then our processing, we get really good consistency in our quality.
Is all grass the same?
No, it all starts with the soil, Jesse. So if you've got to look after the soil to get good quality grass, there's soils that can be, you've got to keep giving back to the soil. So we try to run a re very regenerative system here. It's a pretty broad term that, but farming with higher covers, what I mean is with the grass a bit longer, letting it go to seed, and then the cattle going through, taking the best of it, knocking the seed back into the ground, it kind of rejuvenates the soils and lets the new grasses come through. So really targeting or looking to grow a grass that has high energy, and is the best for the cattle.
And I don't think you're organic, but you do try and minimize synthetic fertilizer use.
Yeah, we've reduced our synthetic fertilizers by 3/4 in the last 4 years. It's a bit like you can't sort of go cold turkey on it. You need to be. We found that I tried to, and we've found to, that we've had to keep giving back a little bit. But now we're using a lot of organic fertilizers, and we're not organically registered, certified. We don't want to be. That's not our goal, because our focus is actually getting the good beef. We're obviously antibiotic free, and grass fed, so we've got all the good things going into these animals, and so far it's working really well.
A lot of what you're talking about, it's kind of easy to see how it might translate to better beef, but some of the stuff, solar panels and no irrigation and some other aspects of your sustainability practices can't have any effect on the taste of the meat whatsoever. So why do it?
Because we want to look after the land, we want to look after what we've got. I want to leave. We all, as a team, want to leave this place, better than what how we found it. Having the solar panels, that's a sort of the start of our green journey. We've got a real focus on looking after what we've got, looking after the soils, looking after the environment.
How, this might be an odd question, but maybe you'll know what I'm going for here. What is your relationship with these animals? You spend so much time around them. What are your feelings towards them? You must get quite fond of them.
Yeah, you get to know any farmer, gets to know the animals really well. They've all got a tag number, and they're all known by number. So I talk to the staff, and it's like, oh, number 30's looking pretty good this weekend. You start to listen to yourself, and you're like, getting to know these animals too well. But you do, you learn, you have a bit of an affinity for them. You watch their progress for 2 years, and it's really cool to see staff as well. We've got a really good staff, good farm staff, and they're all really proud of what we produce. Here at Matangi, we've got Mike Sugden, who really looks after the breeding side of it, looking after the cows, and then some of the finishing stock too, some of the 2-year-old stock. And then we've got Mark Murphy down on the second block, Atua, which is looking after the young cattle. And right through, he looks after them for about 16 to 18 months, and we get them back looking really good. So yeah, we've got good staff looking after these cattle. They're really proud of them, and and we all sort of celebrate the ups and downs and the results at the end.
Do
I
you
should point
reckon
out
you're
that
gone?
I was just going to say that at the end of life, Jesse, they're independently graded by a grader that has been trained by AusMeet, which is in Australia. So this is independently graded, and they look at the marbling, which is scaled from 1 to 9, 1 being no marbling, 9 being grain-fed Wagyu, lots of marbling in the steaks. He also grades on pH, the pH levels in the meat, the fat color, and the meat color. And anything over marble score 4 and pH under 5.7 and lots of other numbers, we could have a reserve grade, and we call it reserve grade. And we're really proud this year we're at 73% reserve grade, which is a real achievement. And averaging well over 4 in our marbling scores. So, that's not just, it's everything's done for a reason, everything's measured. And we're getting some really good results.
Yeah, lovely. Can I ask, and we'll try and keep this not too gruesome for sensitive listeners, but is the way in which they're killed and the, I guess, the hours leading up to them being killed, do you think that affects the quality of the beef?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have to keep that stress right down to a minimum, and that's a big part of what we do too. So things throughout their life, the stress is kept low because we're looking to eat low pHs in the marbling score. So through their life, no loud noises with dogs, only hitting dogs, which don't bark, are used. Keeping feed up to them as soon as an animal takes a check or will lose weight. That's a stress event. So we keep them fed for their whole life. Yard time is a minimum, and that's at the end of life as well. So the yard time is an absolute minimum, and it all they're brought in from the paddocks, and it all happens within about an hour. So it's very quick, and that has to be done with minimal stress to keep the eating quality good. So that's a big focus.
Our Monday expert feature on beef, and I'm talking to Jamie Gaddam from Matangi Beef. What's your favourite way to eat it, Jamie?
Well, I'm a big barbecue man, Jesse, and I love doing. We've got all the top cuts, obviously sell really well, but we've got a few heroes that I love the tri-tip, for example, when we can put it on the barbecue. I love to just put it on a medium heat and then reverse sear it, oh, just with a bit of salt. It's beautiful, really,
Awesome.
really nice.
Doesn't need much, eh?
Doesn't need much, the intermuscular fat that melts into the meat when you're cooking. Brings out this amazing flavor. And the other thing about our meat too is they are all hung for 21 days on the bone in a chiller, and that brings out an amazing flavor too. So that with the marbling, the feedback we get from chefs is we are this meat is different and tastes really good.
Good stuff. Thank you, Jamie. Thanks for taking this animal up until the processing. And now we'll go to Nikki Gaddam, who's business manager for Matangi Beef. Hi, Nikki.
Hi, Jesse. How are you?
Good. Thanks for waiting patiently there. And so tell me what happens after it's processed and your interest in that. You use pretty much everything, do you?
Yeah, I mean that's one of the big things about beef. It's the interesting thing about it is there's so much to use in such a variety of cuts, which I think for any home cook or any chef makes it a really exciting protein to use. It's also a challenge, I think, as a producer because you've got a big carcass. Ours average 370 kilos per animal carcass weight, and so we and only 16% of that animal is your prime cut. So we have to find a home for each and every one of those cuts, and that's the challenge, but also the fun thing. And so we, as Jamie explained, we have full control right from the breeding of the animal through to delivery. And I guess my job sort of kicks in at the point where the carcasses arrive at our butchery, and they're hung there for 21 days on the bone before our butchers. We've got an awesome team of in-house butchers who then do the breaking down and cutting to our clients what they want.
Tell me about the hanging,
And
Nikki. What's the point of that?
So it's all hung on the bone for 21 days, and what that does is essentially the meat loses some moisture over that time, which really concentrates the flavor of the beef, but also gives a more tender product. So we're really aiming for that top eating quality that we can get, and that hanging for that time really adds to that eating quality.
Yeah, and people might get a bit nervous here and think, well, hang on, if you've got meat that's hanging there for 21 days, surely isn't mold or other sort of pathogens a problem? How does that work?
Yeah, so it's all done in a controlled environment where temperatures are checked constantly, and basically it allows the meat to decay, start to decay, but in a very safe way. So then the butchers break down the carcasses, they trim off anything that's not okay to be eaten, and we prepare the cuts to order for chefs around the country. We also have an online store at matangi.co.nz, and we have now a new boutique butchery which we've just opened in Hastings a few months ago.
Well, tell us about this animal and the cuts that you get out of it.
Yeah, so there's a huge variety, as I said. You have your cuts, which are traditionally your top cuts, which most people know about. Cuts such as your eye fillet, your rib eyes, your sirloin. But I think the ones that we find really interesting, and we find our chefs find really interesting too, are the lesser known cuts. So we sort of do a range of cuts, some that are more come from, say, South America, some that are French. So for example, we were co-winner of the Outstanding Food Producer Awards last week for our Bavette steak. So this sort of has French origins, but it's a bit like a big flank, but much more marbling through it, and a lovely grain running through the meat. So it's a great grilling steak for you can do it. It's about 2 kilos, so it's good for a group of people, but it lends itself quite well to being marinated because of the lovely grain that runs through the steak as well.
Which one was that? I missed the name of it.
The Bavette
Bavette,
steak.
yeah. And you come across that much more often these days, don't you? It was, I don't think I would have ever seen it maybe more than, 5 years ago. But it's a, would you say, fair to say, a bit of a chef's favourite or maybe a butcher's favourite?
Definitely. I have the we have a waiting list for our cuts with chefs, and the Bavette is one of our most popular steaks. One of our chefs at Ombre in Taupo, Phil Blackburn, he does a fantastic Bavette dish there, which he often has on the menu in the summertime.
If you've got a question about beef, Nikki is our expert today. 2101 is the text number. And I mean, you talked about primary and secondary cuts there. And this must be getting a bit greyer, this division between the two, because 20 years ago, again, this was really true. You could get a bargain by going for a secondary cut, but there's been an increasing recognition of the value of those so-called secondary cuts. It's harder to find a bargain in beef these days.
Yeah, most definitely. I think the I guess it's a supply and demand thing as well. We sell out weekly of our so-called secondary cuts. But I think there's still a real range in terms of I guess if you're looking for a more economical cut to cook for a family, for example,
Yes, please.
your cut such as your chuck steak and your blade steaks, your brisket are still great cuts that you can do in big quantities and add other things like lentils too, for example, to beef them up to make nice casseroles and braised dishes for your family in wintertime.
Surely people are paying a premium for Matangi brisket.
Yes, yeah. I mean, we because of our process, we're a boutique producer, so our overheads are much higher at every step of the way. So there is a premium on our cuts, absolutely. But we still find that depending on what you're looking to cook, there tends to be a price point for most people depending on what they're wanting.
Okay, let's talk about steaks. What are our options here? And by the way, I'm talking to Nikki Gaddam from Matangi Beef, but we're talking about beef in general here. So if you're at the supermarket and you're picking something, this will apply to everyone. But talk me through the different steaks and what's right for who.
Sure. So Yeah, we in our shop in Hastings, it's interesting the people that come in and chat to us about what they're wanting, and often a couple might come in and the husband might have certain specifications for his steak that he wants, and the wife might want something quite different. So if you're looking for something that's more mild in flavour and cuts through like butter, of course your eye fillet is a really fantastic option for that. There's a lovely little cut called the teres major or petite tender, which is not that well known here in New Zealand. It's about 300 grams, and we personally use it quite a lot at home during the week. It's almost as tender as the eye fillet, but it has a bit more flavour, and so it's great for cooking for a weeknight and just quickly searing on each side and then slicing over a salad
Oh,
or
I like
having with
that.
vegetables.
Where do you find that one?
So that comes from the shoulder of the animal, but if you have a look on our website, it's under our Hidden Champions section, and it's sitting in there. They're about $17 each, and they feed two to three people quite easily.
Yeah, good one. How should we decide the well doneness or the doneness of the beef we're cooking?
That's a personal preference, and I personally, for us, our meter thermometer is an absolute lifesaver, I have to say. You know, we often cook big cuts. Our animals are tend to be bigger because they're not killed until till they're about 24 months of age. So our big cowboy ribeyes tend to be a huge cut, and we use a meter thermometer which connects to a cell phone, which I have to say is a lifesaver. Making sure that you get your cut spot on to whatever level of doneness that
Particularly
you're
if
looking
you're,
for.
as you said earlier, if you've got a 2 kilo cut, it's going to be a pretty valuable piece of meat. You don't want to stuff it up, and you know, it's
Yes.
probably some big occasion you're cooking it for anyway. It's a lot of pressure.
You want to make sure you get it right, absolutely.
Someone wants to know what you mean by reverse searing, please.
So reverse searing is a technique where you, so traditionally people would sear in a normal method of cooking, you would sear the outside or brown the outside of the beef first and then take it off the heat and cook it at a lower heat until it's ready. With a reverse sear, you would cook it at a low temperature, about 120, until it's and it comes out looking a bit grey and not that nice actually, but you've cooked it nice and slowly, and then you sear it. You let it rest first of all for about 10 minutes, and then you sear it on the barbecue to give you that lovely brown caramelized crust on the meat. So you can look up online reverse sear for the method, but the real key to, I think, cooking beef is making sure that you bring it out of the fridge and bring it up to room temperature at least a couple of hours before you cook it. Make sure you salt it really well. Our beef is quite, it has a very distinct flavour. It's a robust flavour, and we really don't suggest people use things like rubs on it. Really, a decent salt is all you need. So salt it a couple of hours beforehand, and then oil the steak rather than the pan. And make sure you rest it is really key for at least 10 minutes at the end.
Yeah, tell me about resting it. And by the way, Jamie, you can jump in any time you like. But yeah, how should you think about resting meat, and how long should you work out, or how should you work out how long to rest it for?
Well, I tend to rest the steak for about as long as I cook it.
Huh.
And, you know, like that sounds strange, but it gives you a much better result. Like if you just let that meat relax afterwards for about as long as you cook it, like, yeah, it's a different steak. It really is.
People
And
will be
making sure you
worried, sorry, Nikki, people will be worried about it cooling down though. And you know, when you're imagining a lovely steak, probably you think about a hot steak, don't you?
Yes. So you can, of course, cover it with a piece of tin foil. It can help to just obviously keep it nice and warm while it's resting. But cutting it across the grain is also really important to make sure that you're shortening those fibres so it gives you that lovely tender mouthfeel as well.
Would that be the case with some cuts more than others, cutting it against the grain?
I think it's a general rule with beef, because otherwise you've got the long stringy fibres coming through, and it's just a lot more effort in terms of, if you want a tender steak, I would always cut across the grain.
What's your favorite slow cook cut?
I'll answer that. We love the short ribs. They're a really special cut, and my preference is always to do those in an Asian style marinade, long and slow, and then browning them off at the end, so you get a beautiful, delicious sweet crust on the meat as well. The shin, the bone-in shin, is also a really lovely one to do long and slow in some liquid, and it's then beautiful, just pulled apart and used as a ragu with pasta, for
Yum,
example.
yum. Someone wants to know, in the spirit of nose to tail eating, do you sell your offal cuts as well?
So where the animals are processed, part of the process is that they actually will take part of the payment, sorry, is that they will take the offals, and that's fine by us because we're a startup business, and we're just really concentrating on getting rid of all our whole carcass. And so they take all the offals, the hide, tongues and cheeks and things at this stage. And but that's something once we get our systems right, and as I say, we've just opened this butchery. Once we get our systems in line, then we'll be selling everything.
Yeah, you can imagine if a steak's going to taste better off a particular sort of animal, then the liver probably would as well.
Yeah, there's a big market out there for the offal. I get weekly requests from people wondering if they can take the offal. Beef suet is another thing that we don't get back with our carcasses, but
One
that's a
day,
special,
yeah.
and
Thank you.
high value
Sorry
as
to
well.
interrupt you. I let my beef questions get away with me. We're out of time. Jamie and Nikki Gaddam from Matangi Beef, thanks so much.
Thanks,
Jesse.
Jesse.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.